Good afternoon, everybody. Happy to have you on our first call, Speak to Engage, 7-Step Shortcut to Public Speaking Success. I'm Lisa Braithwaite. I'm your coach. And today we are kicking off our 7-week program, and I'm super excited to have you all here. I would love to have everybody go into the Facebook group and introduce yourselves and say hello to the other people in the group and just get started kind of interacting. The thing about this program, just like any program that you might sign up for, is what you put into it is what you get out of it, right? So if you take the time to interact with me, with other group members, to answer the discussion questions on Facebook, post your own questions to the group and see what others have to say, feel free to post a video if you have a video of yourself speaking and ask for feedback. This is your group, and there's a wide range of experience levels in the group, and you can learn a lot from each other. So I don't expect you to only be learning things from me. I think it's really important that people in the group learn from each other and answer each other's questions and participate and interact. Today, our topic is the audience comes first, and I'm going to be talking a lot today about adult learning, because I really like to start from this place about really understanding your audience. So keep in mind that if you are working on a presentation, if you're planning a presentation, if you have one in mind, a lot of this information will be really useful to you if you're able to apply it to something that you're working on. But you can also apply concepts we talk about to something you've done in the past or something you're working on. So be thinking about how the things that we talk about each day apply to your current situation in terms of the kind of speaking that you're doing now or the kind of speaking that you want to do. Everything that we talk about will apply to something you're doing now, something you're going to do in the future, or something you've done in the past. So you can really apply this in a lot of different ways, forward and backward. And another thing I'm going to remind you is that if you don't already have speaking engagements on your calendar, please get some engagements on your calendar, because no matter how much you pay attention and come to the classes or listen to the recordings and read all the materials in our private member site, there's a ton of great stuff here for you. But if you are not doing speaking engagements, you have nothing to apply it to. So I really want you to get some speaking engagements on your calendar. If you have questions about how to do that, there will be a lot of information, good information about that in our private member site, but you can always just post a question in Facebook and ask me any questions that you have. I will be there to answer. So just remember, you can't put these things into practice if you're not actually getting out in the world and speaking. That is the number one rule here, is that you have to actually get speaking engagements so that you can put these things into practice. All right, let's begin with our first topic. And this is step one, the audience comes first. And if you've been on any other calls with me, if you've read my blog, if you read anything that I post, you'll see that this is something that I talk about a lot, because it's something that a vast majority of speakers seem to forget. And that is that you need to make your presentations about your audience and not about yourself. And this is a huge shift for a lot of people, because we tend to get very self-centered when we're planning a presentation, and we start to think about ourselves a lot, right? Am I going to be able to keep their attention? Am I going to be funny? Am I going to be witty? Am I going to lose my place? How do I look? How do I sound? And we get this very sort of me mentality going. And the truth is, you're going to have a much better success rate with your audiences if you're making it about them and not about you, because you know what? They really care about themselves. That's what they care about, and that's why they're there, to get something of value for themselves. So we're going to talk about this mind shift in terms of how you look at your presentations in the future, and really flipping this around so that you're not thinking about yourself and worrying and stressing out about yourself, but that you're really thinking about how you can provide the best value to your audience. So here's why I like to talk about adult learning on the first day. You know, when we were kids, we went to school, we sat through class every day, and our teachers taught pretty much everyone the same way. Didn't really matter you know, how you learned best, what the best tools were to reach you as an individual. At least, I mean, I'm speaking for myself. And, you know, that's the way things were done back then. I think probably teaching now is a lot more progressive. But even still, a teacher has to reach a whole classroom of kids in a pretty short time frame, right? So the teacher tends to stand up in the front of the room and kind of talks and lectures. And I think teachers are, as I said, more aware of the issues that affect children's learning and are doing a better job these days. But the principles of adult learning are still pretty new to most people. And if you're a speaker and you're doing any kind of education or training with the groups that you're speaking to, you need to understand the basics of adult learning principles, especially when it comes to audience engagement, which is the theme of this program. So here's a little background on adult learning. There's someone, his name is Malcolm Knowles. He was considered the father of adult learning, although the topic had been discussed and researched for over 100 years before he kind of solidified these theories and assumptions into adult learning, specific adult learning principles. But his assumptions were that adults move from dependency to self-directedness. You could say this about children too, really. If you teach them properly, they will eventually be self-directed and they won't need people to tell them what to do anymore. And this is how adults are. We tend not to need people to tell us what to do after a while. We were dependent in the beginning and then we move to self-directedness. We also draw upon our reservoirs of experience for learning. This is extremely important to know about adults. Everybody has a lifetime of knowledge and experience. Every adult you teach, everybody in your audience, they have their own lifetime of experiences and knowledge, and they're going to draw on that and try to apply what you're teaching them to what they already know and what they've already experienced. Also, adults are ready to learn when they assume new roles, and this happens to us a lot as well, right? We change jobs, we change positions, we become an entrepreneur and open our own company, we take on a volunteer role. Every time we assume a new role, we're ready. We're ready to learn. We're ready to take on whatever the new challenges are. And then the last thing, Malcolm Knowles' last assumption about adults was that we want to solve problems and we want to apply our new knowledge immediately, okay? So, you know, we're practical. We go into a training or a class and we want to be able to walk away and right now apply that knowledge. So this is the kind of thing that you have to remember about adults. So I'm going to go through the basics of adult learning principles today. And you'll also see that when you go into the Facebook group, into the WordPress private member site, you'll see that there is a specific handout just on adult learning principles that kind of summarizes what I'm going to talk about today. So you'll have this recording and you'll also have that handout that kind of will summarize the main adult learning principles. And these are the things I want you to think about every time you create a presentation, okay? And I'm going to talk about these things as they apply to public speaking and as they apply to your presentation. So the adult learning principle number one that I want to talk about is autonomy. And I want you to remember that adults prefer to be autonomous and self-directed. And that means that they want to, or we as adults, want to decide for ourselves what, when, how, and why to learn. Okay? So if you're a speaker or a trainer in a program, you want to allow the people in the room to direct some of their own learning. Okay, so I'm actually going to post, I'm going to post the first question to the group today. And let's see, question number one. I have to talk and type at the same time. Question number one from today's call, how can you facilitate your audience's autonomy, okay? And I'm going to give you a couple of examples, but I'd like you to pop into the Facebook group and talk a little bit about how you in your presentations feel that you could facilitate your audience's autonomy a little, maybe more than you're already doing, okay? So here are some ways that you can facilitate your audience's autonomy and help them be self-directed. First of all, ask them what they already know about your topic and what they're interested in learning, and find out what their goals are for being there. And that's actually another question that I'm going to post in the Facebook group, which I forgot to post. It was supposed to be the first question in the Facebook group, and unfortunately, I forgot. So the question is, the question I have for you is, what outcomes are you hoping for by participating in this program? Okay, so I've also posted this. What outcomes are you hoping to achieve by participating in Speak to Engage? Okay. There, so I've now posted two questions for you in the Facebook group, and I will expect to see you pop over there and share your response. So ask your participants what they already know, what they're interested in learning, and find out what their goals are for being there. This will go a long way toward helping you customize your program for the people in the room, okay, the people who are planning to be there. Another thing you can do is share your agenda, and you can ask them for input. This might lead to switching around the order of your workshop that might serve your group's needs better. And then you also might find that you spend more time on certain subjects than you had planned and less on others. So be flexible. And a good example of this is for me when I send out questionnaires to people in my, say, corporate training programs, I will get information back that maybe suggests that the people coming to the program don't have a lot of fear of public speaking. Perhaps gaining more confidence is their goal, but they don't have a lot of fear. So I'm going to look at my program that I'm planning to present, and I'm going to reduce how much I talk about fear, because that's not a really big issue with the people in that particular group. So that's just one example that is very common for me. I find out a lot of people I work with don't really have a fear of speaking. They just want to gain more confidence, and they want to get better. So that's one of the things I find out when I ask them what their input is. And then as a facilitator, it's your job to guide the group and encourage them to reach their own conclusions. So when we were kids, we were force-fed a lot of information, and sometimes maybe even we were force-fed our teacher's political views. We can't do that as adults, right? We can't force-feed information to our audiences in a lecture format. We need our audiences to be responsible for their own learning. This is one of the first things I learned in grad school. I remember probably my very first day of class in grad school. Our professor said, "You are responsible for your own learning. You're in grad school, you know, you're here by choice. Nobody's looking over your shoulder and telling you what you should and shouldn't learn." And it was really liberating for me to realize that I was in charge of my own learning. And you know what? Because of that, I actually chose not to read some of the books that were assigned. I remember reading one book, and I started reading it, and I thought, God, this is really sexist. And I found the book very offensive. So I just didn't read it. No, I didn't need it because I was able to do my work without it. But it was sort of this freedom in realizing that I'm responsible for my own learning. And as an adult, you know, my parents aren't, you know, asking me how I'm doing in school, and I don't have a teacher that's grading me. So really pay attention to that with the people in your audiences, that they're responsible for their own learning. You can't force them to learn something if they're not ready for it or if they're not interested in it. And then do your research on the group. And do your research on the organizational needs beforehand so that you can provide a combination of information that meets their perceived needs and their actual needs. And here's something that happens a lot when I do corporate training, that the organizer will call me and hire me, and we'll have this conversation about what the people need in their company. And then when I send out surveys to those people, I get kind of different answers. So I want to satisfy the needs of the person who's hiring me, obviously, and I want to satisfy the needs of the people who are going to be in the group. But you don't know what that is if you don't do your research. So make sure that you find out what they feel that they need and want, and also what the person hiring you feels that they need and want. And sometimes it's not somebody hiring you. Sometimes it's a class like this or something, you know, a similar kind of a situation. Sometimes it's a public presentation at a conference where you don't actually have that luxury, and that's a little more difficult. But the more research you can do in advance, the more you learn about your audience, the better you'll be able to meet their actual needs. So that all was adult learning principle number one, and some examples of how you can facilitate your audience's autonomy. And now we're going to look at adult learning principle number two. And this has to do back to what we were talking about regarding regarding knowledge and experience. As I said earlier, adults have a lifetime of knowledge and experience that informs their learning. And adult learners or your audience members can be a valuable resource for you as an instructor or as a speaker. It's important for them to connect their learning to their previous life experiences. So I'm going to give you some examples of how to make the most of your audience's experience and knowledge. And I am also going to post question number two in our Facebook group. Question number two from today's call. And that is, how are you using your audience's lifetime of knowledge and experience in your presentations? Now, I understand you may not have immediate answers for these. Maybe you're still at a place where you haven't figured that out yet. But this is good homework for you to think about how you're going to do this in the future. Think about who the audiences are that you're speaking to and who you want to speak to and how you can apply these principles. So maybe you're not doing them now, but that's why you're here, right, to learn how to do them as you go forward. So here are a couple ways that you can think about making the most of your audience's experience and knowledge. First of all, don't assume that your participants are blank slates and know nothing about your topic, okay? Nothing is more insulting to an audience than a speaker who launches into a lecture without first finding out the needs and knowledge level of the audience. So I already mentioned doing your research and asking them first to find out what they already know. But any assumption when you walk into the room that your audience doesn't know anything about your topic, that's probably going to be a problem, right? Because I know you all. You're adults. You've been around the block a few times. You've given presentations. You have experience with speaking. You have experiences with audiences. And those are your experiences and not mine. And I don't know what your exact experiences are because you're an individual and you've lived your own life. So I'm never going to walk in here or come onto these calls and assume you don't know anything. That's not my style. So when it is appropriate, ask your audience to share their experiences and create activities that call on them to use their experiences, for example, in small group discussions. Now, that's something that's a little harder to do when you're on a webinar or a teleseminar, right? But if you're in a room full of people, it's really easy to have your audience members turn to their neighbor and have a conversation with that one person, or if they're sitting at a table, have a conversation with the people at their table and actually share their experiences that relate to whatever you're talking about in that moment. And then have them share and talk about what they've learned from those experiences. And that way it's easier for them to apply what they're learning from you to their own lives. And then the third part of this under the lifetime of knowledge and experience is to actually prepare activities that let your audience make choices so that the learning process can better fit the individual levels of your participants. So for me, what that means is I tend to give, I give little group activities or partner activities when I meet with a live audience, but I also like to give them their own handout, their own activity to do on their own, so that whatever their level is, this activity will be appropriate for them. So it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a mixture of giving your audience group things and individual things to do so that they can benefit from their own experience and their own knowledge, which might be at a different level than other people in the room. So give them as many opportunities as they can to benefit from their own knowledge and experience. All right. Adult learning principle number 3 is relevancy. This one is huge because ultimately if what you're trying to teach your audience is not relevant to them, then you're going to lose them right off the bat, right? So I'm typing this into the Facebook group, question number 3 from today's call. How are you making your topic relevant to your audiences? Relevancy. It's important to us as adults that we are learning something relevant and applicable to our real lives, right? Whether it's work-related or whether it's personal, I need to feel that I am not wasting my time going through a program or listening to a speaker who is not giving me things that are relevant to my experience. So, how can you make your topic relevant to your audience? Here are a couple of examples. As we talked about before, identify their learning objectives and ask participants to share their goals. So some of these things may overlap a little bit, right? So one of the questions I asked you in the Facebook group today is, what outcomes are you hoping to achieve by participating in Speak to Engage? By knowing what outcomes you're hoping to achieve, it helps me know what your learning objectives are and keep the content relevant to you. That will require you to also ask me some questions and post any questions and concerns that you have in the Facebook group or email them to me. Because if I don't know what your learning objectives and goals are, then I can't tailor this course to you. Of course, I've created this course so that it works for a lot of different kinds of people with a lot of different kinds of needs. But the people who are in the group at the moment are the ones that I'm hoping to serve. So you can always identify learning objectives and ask participants to share their goals. You can discuss and ask for sharing of real-world applications of your topic. Again, you share your information, and then you ask them, how is this relevant to you? How is this relevant to what you do? Ask them to brainstorm that and think about it. So the questions that I'm asking you right now, how are you making your topic relevant to your audiences? You know, how are you facilitating your audience's autonomy? I want to know how these topics that I'm talking about today are relevant to you in your life and in your speaking engagements. And then another thing to think about is to avoid giving a workshop or a presentation that's too theoretical, okay? Again, speaking of how adults like to learn, we like to take things and apply them to our lives right now. We like to walk away with a tool we can use. We're busy, you know, we have a lot of things going on, and we don't want to have to try to translate some theoretical stuff that's all sort of up here in our heads. We don't want to have to translate that to how it's useful in the real world. So help your audience understand how these things are relevant to them in the real world rather than keeping it all very theoretical. Okay? There's a great book that I read when I was in grad school. It's called Teacher. And the author is Sylvia Ashton Warner. And she was, gosh, I always forget if she was English. I think she might have been English, and went to work with Maori children in New Zealand. And she recalls trying to teach them to read out of European textbooks that had images and language that meant nothing to them, right? So you're talking about teaching children. I'm going to look her up right now so I can actually get this information right because I keep I keep saying this every time. I can't remember where she's from. Oh, no, she was from New Zealand. Never mind. She wasn't from England, but she was from New Zealand. And so she went to work with Maori children, right? So, you know, she's coming from these textbooks, or she's bringing these textbooks in that have pictures of cars and pictures of tall buildings and things that have no relevance to these Maori children who are living in these little villages. And when she starts working with these children within their own language, within their own culture, and when they're within their own experiences to actually teach them reading, they start to blossom. And I was so inspired by this book. When I was in grad school, I was doing practicum with kids in a school where I was working part-time. And I found that this was amazing. It was amazingly true to life when I did it with my own students. So I had a couple of first graders who were having a terrible time learning to read. They couldn't even identify simple words like car and cat and things like that. And it was frustrating, right? Because we all, you know, we think, well, if we teach everybody to read phonetically, or they, in the school that I was working, they used something called the whole language approach. And these kids were still having a really hard time. So what I would do is I would go sit down with them and I would say, you tell me the words that you want to learn. Okay. So one little boy who couldn't recognize or spell the word cat or car came to me and he said, well, I want to know how to spell vehicle. I want to know how to spell hamster. I want to know how to spell dinosaur. These were the words that were interesting to him. They were way bigger and more complicated than cat and car. But when I brought these words to them and said, okay, here's vehicle, here's dinosaur, here's hamster, we could use the words that they were interested in learning how to read. So, I mean, it was a fascinating approach, and again, just goes back to this concept of relevancy. If something is relevant to somebody, they're much more likely to learn than if it's not relevant, okay? And it really is one of the major keys to learning for people of all ages. Obviously, I'm telling you about working with kids. This is relevant to adults as well. So adult learning principle number four. Another super important thing that those of us who go out and speak in conferences and do corporate training or even speak in our local health food store or giving a presentation for the board at work or the board at our local nonprofit, whatever it is, motivations and barriers to learning are hugely important to adults. So I want you to pay attention to this really closely. We are motivated to learn by both external and internal factors. Now, when we were kids, many of us were not motivated to learn by anything other than our parents' and teachers' rewards and punishments, right? Especially for kids who had a hard time in school, for kids who didn't do well in school, a lot of those kids, weren't interested in learning for learning's sake. Their whole goal was just to make it through the day. Right? Make it through the semester without getting an F. For a lot of kids, learning for its own sake was never an issue. It was really about what their parents and teachers would reward them with, or how they would punish them for not learning. Well, as adults now, we are taking matters into our own hands, right? We decide that we want to learn something. That's why people are in your class. They may want to learn, or they may be being told they have to learn. But now we are dealing with external and internal factors. So some of the reasons that we may pursue learning as adults. It may be a requirement of a job. Your job may send you to trainings, and you have no choice. You're mandated. Sometimes we want to make new friends and connections. So people will take a class just to kind of get out of the house and meet other people. And I hear this a lot with moms who work at home who don't have a lot of involvement in the outside world because there's so much going on with their kids and maybe their business, or maybe they don't have their own business, but they're at home as a stay-at-home mom. And they want to get out in the world and meet people, so they'll take a class. And I know this is really common. Sometimes we will pursue learning just for our own professional development and to advance our careers. Sometimes we know that the more we learn, the more credits we earn, the more degrees we earn, whatever it is, we will maybe get higher pay, we'll get promoted, we'll get better jobs. Sometimes people pursue learning to relieve boredom. Maybe people are just bored and are bored in their lives and they need something to inspire and motivate them. Sometimes we're interested in a particular topic and just want to learn for fun. And my husband and I did that. We took a jewelry class together probably 20 years ago now. And my husband went on to learn all kinds of really complicated jewelry making techniques. He remade our wedding rings. We got rid of our gold wedding rings and he remade them for us in silver. And he's made some amazingly beautiful jewelry. And it was just because he really wanted to do something that was fun and that he could do with his hands. Now, I, on the other hand, dropped out right after the first jewelry class because I wasn't interested in soldering and sawing things. But he really loved it. And then another reason that people pursue learning might be to create a better environment for their children and for their families. So, and that may tie into some of the other things about professional development and advancing our careers. And it may just be that we want to be the most well-rounded person we can be for our children and our families. So, okay, the list can go on and on and on, right? I could go on and on all day about the reasons that people choose to pursue learning. So as an instructor or a speaker, or a trainer, it's important to understand these reasons why your attendees might be in the room. As I mentioned earlier, they may not be there by choice. So if you know that they're not there by choice, that's going to give you some insight into that person's motivations. And those motivations are going to be very different from somebody who's there because they want to be. So now, it's important to understand what motivates your participants to learn, right? So we talked about the things that the reasons that people pursue learning. It's also important to understand what might be barriers to learning. Okay, so I'm going to take a second and take a sip of water here. Okay, barriers. What gets in the way of people learning? So let's talk about this for a minute because you're going to have a lot of people that you come across as a speaker, as somebody who wants to lead workshops or deliver various kinds of training and seminars or even speaking up at work, you're going to have a lot of people in the room who have a variety of barriers to learning, okay? So here's an example. Some people have financial concerns, right? So they can't afford to pay for a class. They cannot even take the class because they don't have the money for it, or they think they don't have the money for it. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, this may be a perception, right? A perception of not having the money rather than actually not having the money, but we don't know that. We don't always know that, right? People have time constraints. Some people have barriers to their learning because of childcare issues, and they literally have no one to watch their children, so they can't experience what you have to offer. Something that I experienced when I was working in the domestic violence field is that sometimes there are relationship issues. Sometimes one partner feels threatened by the advancement of the other partner, and so one person wants to go and learn or go back to school or take some classes, and the other partner is resistant to that for whatever reason, and that keeps them from learning. Some people have a lack of confidence in their ability to learn. So I was talking earlier about some students who barely made it through school, and for whatever reason, school is harder for some kids than it is for others. And if you're one of those people, you might grow up believing that you're not good at learning, that you can't learn, you're not smart, for whatever reason it is, you won't be able to learn new things. There are a lot of people who have that as a huge barrier to their learning. And I want to tell you a little secret. My husband was one of those people he's extremely bright and extremely intelligent, but school was not designed in a way that was helpful for him. School was not designed in a way that was helpful for him to learn, and he did not do very well. He had a really hard time all through school. And just in the past, 15 years or so, he's come around to the reality that he actually can learn and loves to learn when it's something that is relevant and interesting to him. So he recently started taking classes for his job, and his company is paying for these classes to build some of his skills for his for the company that he works for. And he's getting straight A's, and he almost can't even believe it himself. But once he changed his attitude about his learning abilities, everything changed for him. And these topics are interesting to him because it's going to help him in his professional development. But this is something that you may or may not know about your audience members, that they may feel like they can't learn. They're not good at learning. So, again, I could go on and on and on about the barriers to learning, right? Some people might not sign up to my class because they think, I don't know how relevant it's going to be to me. I don't know how practical it's going to be. I don't know if I can use the things I'm going to learn, right? And so I see these kinds of things, specifically money, specifically time. I see these things a lot in terms of people signing up for my programs. And those are legitimate barriers for a lot of people. So understanding the motivations that encourage people to learn and understanding the barriers that your participants may be facing, even after they are in the room with you, they may still be concerned about these things that may still stand up as barriers. Okay? So understanding these things can help you as a speaker pinpoint how best to serve your audience by increasing their motivation for learning and asking them the kinds of questions or encouraging them to ask you questions that will help them deal with these barriers, okay, and understand the motivations as well. I mean, if somebody can't sign up for your class because they don't have enough money or they think they don't have enough money, but your class is going to help them earn more money, then that could be a very powerful, it could be a barrier, but it also could be a powerful motivator, right? So these are the kinds of things you want to pay attention to. Question number 4 from today's call is, I'm pasting it into the group right now, what motivations and barriers are your audiences facing? Now, for those of you who are speaking or who have a topic that you want to speak about, I think this is a question that will be fairly easy for you to answer, right? Because you are out there speaking because there's a problem you want to solve or some sort of information or training or education that you want to give. So probably knowing your audience's motivations and barriers is probably something you have a handle on already, so I'd love to have you share in the Facebook group what you think some of those are. All right, and we are at adult learning principle number 5. And this, they're all important. Everyone, I want to tell you, this is a really important one. But you know what? They're all important. I wouldn't be talking to you about them if they weren't. So here's number 5. Adults have sensitive egos, right? We know this. So many of us over the course of our lifetimes have developed a fear of appearing stupid or incompetent, right? So when we were kids, we were encouraged to explore, ask questions, and learn about the world, but somewhere along the way, that curiosity and that sort of freedom and being okay with not knowing things, we lose that as we become adults. And so, we're so nervous about anybody knowing that we don't know something. And, in fact, I wrote a blog post about 5 ways to say I don't know when you're giving a presentation, which actually I don't know if it's in today's material for today's material in the private website, but I'm going to look it up. I'm going to look it up later. You'll find it in there somewhere. But I wrote a blog post about 5 ways to say I don't know because people are so uncomfortable going into a presentation and having to admit they don't know something. So you have to understand that your audiences have sensitive egos, and many adults have mixed feelings about teachers and school and structured learning. So, for example, some people will go to great lengths to hide their inability to read or their lack of understanding of the duties of their own job. I mean, I'm sure you've seen this before, people who don't actually know how to do their job, but they don't want anybody to know. They don't even want their own boss to know, rather than just being upfront about what's happening. They don't want anyone to know because they're so embarrassed. So as a speaker, we have to be really aware of these kinds of issues that our audience might be facing in terms of their ego and in terms of being embarrassed about not knowing things. And we want to build trust with our audiences by treating them respectfully and sensitively and without judgment. So the next question I'm going to post today, I know there are a lot of questions today. There aren't always this many questions on from each call. But yeah, I like to kick it off with a bang. So question number 5 from today's call, and this is actually question number 6 because the first one is supposed to be about your objectives. How can you pay attention to your audience's sensitive egos? Okay, so think about the topic that you talk about and what about that might make your audience uncomfortable, and how can you be sensitive to that? So here are a couple of tips for you today for how to deal with your audience's sensitive egos. First of all, you can allow your participants to build confidence by practicing what they're learning in small groups before facing the large group. So for example, I do these half-day and full-day trainings where there may be 30 or 40 people in the room and we're doing public speaking practice. So what I'll do is I'll divide them into groups of 3. And then I'll have each person in each group give their 3-minute presentation to just the other 2 people. So all 3 people will deliver their presentation in that small group, and they'll get feedback and they'll talk about it just with that small group. Then if anybody wants to come to the front of the room and share their presentation for more feedback from more people, then they can do that. But starting out, allowing them to build confidence by practicing in a small group before they face the large group is one way to help people deal with that, you know, that sensitive ego. Another thing that you always want to do is use positive reinforcement, right? You always want to encourage your participants. If they're participating, that's great. If they're speaking up, they're asking questions, you want to encourage that, right? Because you want them to feel confident enough to ask you a question that they may think is dumb, but that they want to ask, you know, and they feel uncomfortable asking it. You want to give them that support so that they know if they ask you that question, they won't have to feel stupid about it. If sensitive issues are going to be discussed, it's important to create a safe space by enforcing confidentiality and by allowing participants to pass if there's something that they're not comfortable talking about. So for me, coming out of the nonprofit world, this, you know, these kinds of issues, I talked about a lot of sensitive issues with my audiences. I talked about domestic violence for 6 years in schools and in small groups. Then I went and worked in junior highs. This was the next organization after that. I'm getting my nonprofits mixed up. I went into junior high schools and talked to kids about healthy sexuality. We're talking 7th and 8th graders and talking about their reproductive system and how it all works and the emotional aspects of relationships and all this kind of stuff. You can imagine that in both of those settings, the domestic violence setting and also the healthy sexuality setting, there were some sensitive issues, right? So, you know, we made sure everything was confidential. People didn't have to talk if they didn't want to. We actually gave, we had an anonymous question box so people could put questions in anonymously. And that worked really, really well. We got some really good and intense questions out of that. Another thing that you can do is provide activities that are lower risk before moving on to activities featuring a higher risk or greater trust. So what this means to me is that when I start out a training or a presentation, I will ask the audience a question that they can raise their hand to. I don't ask them to speak. I just ask them to kind of raise your hand if this is, you know, true. And it's an innocuous question. You know, I don't ask somebody to share their deep, dark secrets in the first 5 minutes of the presentation. I give them very simple questions, and I build my way up to the more intense or more complex issues. And then, you know, we start with raising our hand. And then as we move on and I feel that the audience is warmed up and starting to have more trust, then I might ask them to share something with a neighbor. Then after they've shared with a neighbor, then I might ask them to share in the whole group. So there's a progression. There's a progression of trust building with an audience that you need to take into account, especially when you're talking about sensitive issues. But even something like public speaking, my gosh, you wouldn't think this is a sensitive issue. But I have clients who won't even let me put their picture or their testimony on my website because they don't want anyone to know that they saw a public speaking coach. I mean, people have very sensitive egos, so please keep that in mind. And then, as I said before, you know, acknowledge your participants' previous life experiences and knowledge and allow them to voice their opinions and share kind of in the leadership, you know, encourage them to speak up, encourage them to take charge of their learning and their situation. And this builds confidence and helps them feel more trust and also helps them feel less like they're going to be laughed at or that somebody, that they're going to feel like a fool. Okay. So the ego is a huge, huge issue with adult learners. And again, we're calling them adult learners. It's like, I know it sounds like I'm talking to you like you're going to go teach a college class. And of course, that's not, you know, what necessarily what this is about. This is really about any kind of speaking that you do where your audiences are made up with adults or made up of adults. So even though these principles tend to come from a more academic setting, they apply to everybody. They apply to every adult you're ever going to work with in any context, in any kind of speaking engagement. Okay, and then adult learning principle number 6. This is the last one. Adult learning principle number 6. Oh, wait a minute. I just want to make sure that I wrote, how can you pay attention to your audience's sensitive egos? I did. Okay, I wrote that down. I just wanted to make sure I put that in the group. Adult learning principle number 6 is that we as adults are problem-oriented. And because we're problem-oriented, we're also solution-oriented, okay? We're practical. We want to apply what we've learned. And so probably the most important result for adult learners, the people in your presentations, is they want to be able to apply their learning to their work or their personal life immediately, okay? The minute they leave the room. So this is the last question of the day. Oops. Question, oh my gosh, I can't type. Question number 6 from today's call. And here it is. How can you appeal to your audience's desire to solve problems? And again, I think this is going to be an easy one for you if you've been doing any speaking or teaching or training or anything, or even thinking about planning to do it. You already know that your audience has a problem and that you're going to solve it. You're going to offer them solutions. So how can you appeal to their desire to solve their problems? How can you get them to that place as soon as possible? Okay, so here are my examples for this. Use examples. Like, I've been giving you a lot of examples today about my own experiences with clients, my own experiences with teaching. Use examples to help the people in the room see the connection between what you're teaching and how they can apply it practically, how they can apply it in their lives. Okay, so help them see that connection. Use problem-solving activities as part of the learning. And I love doing this. I went to this great, it was just a community gathering a few years ago, but there's a hospital in my old neighborhood that was being renovated and expanded, and it was this huge project. So they would have these community meetings or neighborhood meetings of everybody in the neighborhood to talk about this hospital expansion. And one of the very first things they had us do was sit at table. We were sitting at a table with a group of like 6 or 8 people, and they gave every group a big sheet of flip chart paper, and they had us create a list of, I don't even remember what it was now. It may have been a list of, you know, what are your biggest concerns about the hospital expansion? It could be, what are some ideas that could make this go more smoothly? I can't even remember, but just off the top of my head, they could have done, you know, several kinds of questions like that. And so when you use the problem solving activity during the training, you help people solve their problem right then and there. And so they can actually walk out the door and they've already kind of solved all or part of it. You can create action items or task lists. This is something that I like to do, is give checklists to people so that they actually can take the following actions. You'll see this in your workbook in the private member site, which we're going to go over the workbook next week. I'm just going to walk you through it. You feel free to look at it because it's there and you can access it at any time. But I'm going to walk you through it next week on the call so you understand what all the different handouts are in the workbook. So I love action items. I love checklists and task lists to help people get from point A to point Z. Another way that you can help your audience get to solutions is to help them transfer their learning to their daily practice by offering follow-up coaching or mentoring. And that's something that I do in this program, right? So those of you who signed up using the bonus or using the early bird rate, you also got a bonus of a 30-minute coaching call with me. So I like to offer some sort of follow-up coaching or mentoring to people who go through my program so that I can help them apply what they've learned. So that's another thing you can do to help them transfer their learning to their daily practice. And then you can create an experiential learning environment that it's an environment where your audience can learn by experience, okay? Now, it's not possible with every topic, but do your best to give them something to do or discuss where they can actually experience what you're talking about by going through certain steps, okay? Whew, I'm out of breath. Let me take another drink of water. Oh, my goodness. So that's a lot of information, and that is the overview of adult learning principles. And as I said, there is a handout in the private member site that summarizes everything that I talked about today. So just keep in mind that at its most basic level, adult learning tends to be self-directed. It's based on the person's individual needs and life experiences. Okay? So just remember to follow these particular tips when you have a group of people. And this right here is going to help you be so much more in tune with what they need and deliver and help you deliver what they really want and what's really going to be relevant and helpful to them. Next week, we're going to start talking about the flow and structure of presentations, and we will go through the workbook. Okay, well, thank you for listening. I will see you in the Facebook group, and I'm going to sign out now, and I will talk to you later.